This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Market, New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Cameron Aruba All Inclusive Resort, Rodenizer Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Boxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Man, the lefty's 0-2. Swing and a miss. Foul tip to the mid. Castro holds it, and that's the ball game. And the Red Sox miss an opportunity to gain ground as they fall here tonight by a final score of 6-5. Minnesota taking game one.
Boy, if you had $20 for every time Dave O'Brien or someone else has said that this year, huh? Missed an opportunity. Red Sox missed an opportunity over and over and over again. It's the same thing. It happens over and over and over again. And I admit it. As much as I sit here and tell you that every night, I get sucked in when I'm sitting at home watching the game on television. And last night, it didn't start great. Rick Porcello gets off to a bad start. Then the lead balloons up to 6-0. That home run by Miguel Sano. Holy smokes. You don't see many hit to that part of the ballpark at Fenway Park. You do not see many hit to the right of the 379 marker that hit that back wall. You don't see many there. That thing was an absolute freaking bomb that Sano hit. So it's 6-0, and we're all thinking, okay, there you go. Typical Red Sox. Typical 2019 Red Sox. Good team comes in. They get their asses kicked. That's it. Then they started to rally. Then they started to come back. And it was 6-2 when Rafael Devers pulled one down the right field line. And I thought, based on where it landed, I said, oh, of course, it went foul. Otherwise, boy, if Devers' hits went out, we had a ball game. We would have had a ball game. And in fact, here's what did happen.
Vasquez leading off third. Bradley at first. 2-2 from May. High, deep drive down the right field line. He sucked this one way into the corner. It's gone. Well, just like that.
Just only thing here is it fair or foul? If he ball, this ball's crushed.
It is 6-4.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, just like that, snap of the finger, 6-4. And if you're watching the game, and I was sitting at my desk last night doing my fantasy football draft. I'm sorry. And I had the game on. And as soon as Devers hit one out, I went, ooh, what do we have here? Is there life? Then the Red Sox get it to 6-5 when Benintendi homered in the eighth. And Murray, I took a page out of my father's playbook last night. My father, when I was a kid, often used to go to bed when the Red Sox had a lead after the seventh or eighth inning because he didn't want to see them blow it in the ninth.
Smart man.
Okay, that he would eliminate the pain then and there. So last night, they were down 6-5. Benintendi hit the home run with two outs in the eighth. They get another man on, if you remember, Christian Vasquez struck out on an off-speed pitch to end the eighth. So now it's going to go to the ninth, 6-5. You know what I did?
Went to bed.
I said, I don't want to see this. If they lose, I'm going to be pissed. So I'd rather go to bed knowing that there's a chance I could have won it. Click on my phone in the morning, and there will be Red Sox rally and win 7-6. They lost 6-5. Which brings me to this. And by the way, the phone lines are open. 617-779-0985. Billy Lanny's in for Jimmy Stewart tonight, our producer. Billy will open up the phone lines, or already has. Again, 617-779-0985. Because I want to read something to you that I stumbled upon today. And then I want to know whether you share the sentiment. Okay? So now I'm reading. And I'm not going to tell you from where yet. The Red Sox need to understand something here. This season did damage. Between the Bruins' run to the Stanley Cup final and the start of another Patriots quest, there was a relatively small window for them, meaning for the Red Sox. They never even opened it. Many people disconnected before they ever had a chance to connect, and that means they wiped the Sox from their deep consciousness for basically a year. And I continue, I'm still reading. Now I know what you're thinking, the author writes. It's not like they finished in last place. You're spoiled. There's a difference between a bad year and a mediocre one. True enough. So maybe the Red Sox this year didn't have a horrible year. But they had something worse. An irrelevant one. Murray, you tell me. Does it feel like this baseball season ever even existed?
Nope.
So that's sort of my question, is as a fan, did it ever really sink in?
No, and I was maybe premature in April saying, I think this is going to be a lost season for them, but ultimately I think I'm being proven right. I don't take too much joy in that. We all kind of do root for our takes, if we're being honest. But I think savvy Red Sox fans realize this team showed up fat, happy, still living in the past. They wouldn't shut the hell up about it for the first couple of months, starting with the manager. And I think your savvy Red Sox fans and those that pay attention, yeah, they're going to be there night to night for the most part. But I think they realize pretty quickly, this team just doesn't have they're not what they were last year. They think they can get by on their names and just showing up. And that first month, month and a half, well, that helped put them in the situation that they are today. So, yeah, I think that has contributed mightily to why people have, I don't know, kind of given up early, or just they look at them now and maybe they'll tune in for a little bit or catch the scores the next day. But I don't think people really believe from almost the rip.
I mean, Murray, that start, I'm glad you brought this up because I was thinking about this the other night. 6-13. They're currently 5 out basically in the loss column. If they had gone even during that period of time, let's just say they won 3 more games. Let's say they went 8-10. They'd be 3 out right now. If they went 9-10 or whatever it is. I said 8-11, right? If they'd gone 9-10, they'd be 2 games out. 2 games out. Maybe there would have been a different approach at the trading deadline. Everything would have changed. The fact is that bad start had them running uphill out of the gate.
And if not even just the early start, Maz, how about the fact that they suck at home? Like that's the other thing, too. Like, usually Fenway Park is a pretty difficult place for teams to come in and try to win games, win series. A game under 500 at this point in the season with, you know, 3 weeks to go, that's unbelievable.
Okay, so this was a prevailing theme at the ballpark last night. If you read all the game stories today or what have you, and I read McAdam, I read the Globe, I bounce over to that. The home struggles were a big part of everybody's stories today. You told me a stat earlier in the day. Say it again.
Oh, yes. If the Red Sox keep up this pace and they finish under 500 with a losing record at Fenway Park this year, it will be only the second time in the team's history, their history, that they would have done that. The only other time was 1980.
I mean, that floors me, that stat. Because the Red Sox typically dominate in this ballpark. And you know what? Like, so one of the theories now is, well, they can't keep the ball in the ballpark. Not true. They've allowed more homers on the road than they have at home. So they can't pitch and they can't play at Fenway, which blows me away. Because typically teams come in here and they're intimidated. This team comes in or back from a road trip and pees down its leg over and over and over again. So the part that I find most frustrating is the consistency with which they have taken those steps back. Every single time you think there's an opportunity for them to turn a corner, or last night to win a game they shouldn't win, it goes the wrong way and they lose. Every single time. It's uncanny, really, how consistently that has happened all year long. Every time they've been in a spot where they could make a statement, they haven't made it.
And a lot of that is Betts, too, and he had those opportunities last night. And that's the other thing. In a year where guys are, you know, seems like just about everybody's hitting over 30 home runs, he's got, what, 23? The average is okay. Feels like the defense dipped. Like, I don't know. Like, he's been maybe, like, right at the top for me, outside of the pitchers, one of the more disappointing players on this team this year. Like, he had multiple opportunities last night to kind of kill that narrative of maybe people like me that look at him and say, okay, you're not worth that kind of Mike Trout money. You're a little bit overrated. Yeah, and he lived up to that, unfortunately.
I mean, he had 2 big spots that stick out to me, in the 5th and in the 9th. And both times he got pitches to hit and he missed them. One was a fastball, one was off speed. They were both in the middle of the plate. The slider he got in the 9th inning was a freaking meatball. It was fat. It was a fat pitch, and he missed it. Okay, he missed it. But I'm not going to put it all on Mookie. I'm just telling you, the year has followed. The pattern of the frustration for them this year has been stunning in its consistency. Stunning that they could repeatedly have happened to them the way it did, over and over and over again all year long. You would think at some point it would turn. So again, I read to you a little while ago that the worst part of the season is that the year on paper, it's not going to look like a bad year. But they were largely irrelevant, which maybe is another way of saying there was never a point where anybody really believed in them. So that's my question to the listeners tonight. Was there ever a point where you really believed in them? We'll kick it off with Bob and Methuen. Bob, what do you got?
Hey, Tony, to answer that question, no. And I called up to talk about Alex Cora because I think he's done a terrible job this year going back to spring training.
No problem. Go ahead.
Before spring training, when he named a leadoff hitter in the offseason and then watches that leadoff hitter get three hits before going back to Betts. His comments about after the game last night, I found deplorable.
Which comment after the game? Tell me which one you're talking about.
The Dumber and Dumber comment?
Oh, that was before the game. That was before the game.
Before the game. Okay, excuse me. He has accepted no responsibility and taken no blame for what has occurred this year.
Okay, so Bob, look, I'm not sure that's entirely true. I think Cora recognized about halfway through the year that the team wasn't responding and that they took a wrong approach early in the year. I think he recognized it about halfway through the year. Now, you want to tell me that Cora went in with a cavalier attitude and infected the team and they were way too cocky for their own good? Yep. None of them escaped this year. You know what? I take that back. A couple of them escape. Bogaerts gets away. Devers gets away. And I know he struck out Tendo to end the game last night. But Devers, really? If the Red Sox were in it, Rafael Devers might be the MVP of the league. And if he's not, it might be Bogaerts. Eduardo Rodriguez escapes a lot of criticism. You're going to tell me Brandon Workman, and my answer is I don't think Workman's as good as you do, but overall, Workman did his job. Okay, and then some. So I don't have a huge thing with Workman either. The rest of them, including the manager and the GM, who's probably going to lose his job, none of them escape without some measure of damage. Quickly, David Norwood, you got to go fast.
Hey, what's up, buddy? Yeah, my take on Price, I'm kind of sick of Price. I know this is kind of an old take, but like him dissing on Eck, I'm really glad that karma came back to bite him in the you-know-what. And I think he just should enjoy his country club atmosphere and all the money that he makes compared to the old-school athletes like Eck that weren't making nothing.
Hey, Dave.
And respect his elders.
Yeah, Dave, we can say the word ass on the radio, so I would like you to say came back and bit him in the ass.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, I mean.
No, he want you to say it.
But he needs to respect his elders. It's like, don't talk shit about people like that.
Okay,
know?
Well, that you can't say. I mean, that word you can't say. You can say ass, like someone got bit in the ass. You can't say that word. You know, Billy, what is it? Are you chuckling because I'm covering?
Because I was about to say, you know, maybe the guy, it's maybe like a Mormon. A Mormon person can't say bad words.
Yeah, he didn't want to swear.
And then he immediately dropped that, so that theory went right out the window.
So that did cross my mind, too, that I said to him, I want to hear you say he got bit in the ass. And he didn't want to go there, and I'm like, the guy doesn't want to swear. And then he drops that one, right? That's where you're going. Which serves me right for encouraging someone to swear on the air, even if it was very, soft and mild. 617-779-0985. You heard Bob and Methuen talk about the comment Cora made before the game about Dumb and Dumber? I thought this was actually hilarious. To me, there was some levity in this. We'll play that for you a little bit later in the show. That is coming up. But Cora said a lot of things before the game last night that I think were revealing. We'll get to those remarks next.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
So you control two things, the way you play and the race, because we play four games. You don't control the Indians, you don't control the A's. That's out of the equation. Although we start controlling the Indians when we beat them 2 out of 3. That's all we can do. Just keep playing good baseball, win games, and make that series count in September. And hopefully by that time, we already pass one of the other two teams. And if that happens, then the last week in September, it's going to be fun and do it. But it's easy to say. I can map it out, and I can give you a lot of reasons that we can do this. But obviously, over a course of this season, I've been trying to give you guys reason to believe in us, and it hasn't happened on the field. So we just got to take care of today.
It's Alex Cora last night, and again, that was before the game. I like that comment because I like the way Cora finished it up, and I do want to clarify something he said at the beginning as well. So, Billy Laney, I'm going to ask if you could. We're going to play the very beginning again. So this is Cora prior to last night's opener against the Twins. Go ahead, Billy.
So you control two things, the way you play and the race.
Okay, stop there. So it sounds like he's saying you control two things, the way you play and the race. He's saying the Rays. Tampa, the Rays. He's not saying the race. Because then he goes on to say, we can't control Oakland, we can't control Cleveland. Those teams aren't on the schedule anymore, they're gone. But the Red Sox still have four left with Tampa. So Cora's point is this. If they can make up ground on Cleveland or Oakland, by the time they play Tampa, if they can overtake one of those teams, that they then have the opportunity to beat Tampa head-to-head and take things into their own hands again. But as of right now, they don't have that capacity, and obviously. And so at the end, what I like was what Cora said at the end. He goes, look, I can map this thing out. I've been trying to give you guys reasons all year long as to why this will work. And it just hasn't shown up on the field. And I thought that was a pretty honest assessment of how the year has gone for the Red Sox. I don't know how you could look at it any other way. So again, my question to you as a fan, was there ever a point where you believed in them? Because let me give you a contrast here. In 2015, which was the year Ben Cherington got fired and Dave Dombrowski took over, the Red Sox were on their way to a last place finish. And you know what happened in August and September? Do you guys remember this at all? The young guys took over and played great. And in fact, I mentioned Alex Speer's book last night, Homegrown, about the building of the championship team of last year. He pointed out in that book, and I didn't put this together at the time. Maybe I did, and I just don't remember it. But at that time, John Farrell left the team, and Torrey Lovello took over.
Oh, that's right.
So all of a sudden, the young guys started playing great. And in August and September of that year, the Red Sox were fun, and they were good. Now, they didn't make the playoffs, and they finished last. But going into the next season, there was momentum because of what happened in August and September. So the point being is that even though it was a last place year, the feeling around the team was different. By the end of it, you said, you know what? I believe in them again. There's something there. These guys are turning a corner. Something similar happened with the Yankees a couple of years ago when they ran to the LCS and then lost to Houston. It was a similar dynamic. The Yankees had built on it. Okay, they took a step back last year, but they built on it. The Red Sox have gone the other way. I cannot remember a season where I never believed in the Red Sox at all. And I mean, not for a long time, I can't remember that. Where they went into a year and I said, it was bad at the beginning, they never got in contention, and it was I don't want to call it a train wreck, because a train wreck is 60-102.
Well, 2012 was like that. At least it was for me, and I think a lot of Red Sox fans, like, you know, right out of the gate, you know, the Bobby Valentine year. Like, that was a train wreck.
Okay, so again, you know what, though? Look up something on that team if you get a chance, Murray. Around the middle of May, maybe a little bit later, they were playing pretty well and it was coming together. And there was a time where I went, uh-oh, this might work. It was brief, real brief. And then it fell apart. And then, you know, we were interested in the Red Sox at that time for almost how bad they became. Right? And how dysfunctional they became. This year, this team just let the air out of the balloon from the beginning. And I think, I mean, again, I'm looking for you to tell me if I'm wrong. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the fans to tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, but
I never get sucked into this team like I do other teams.
I think the only time you could maybe make a case for anyone getting sucked in is when they ended up sweeping New York in late July, and that would have been it.
You mean almost sweeping New York? Chris Sale took the mound on Sunday night and they lost.
Oh, that's right, that's right, that's right.
Okay, almost sweeping. So again, and that's how the whole year went. Just when you were ready to get in, yeah. They went the other way.
I just want to correct that stat I gave you
earlier. Sure.
So it would only be the second time they have a losing record at home and a winning record on the road. So they've had seasons where they've, you know, been terrible at home and terrible on the road. This would only be the second time in the history of the Red Sox where they would be have a winning record on the road but a losing record at home.
I mean, it's really task backwards. You never see them do that. You never do. Tom's in Quincy. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, couple things, Tony and Jim. That home loss win loss record doesn't help when you throw the London debacle into it because they lost those two on the home schedule.
It's true, Tom. Yeah. At Fenway, they actually have they're over 500 by one game. But go ahead.
Yeah, and that dumps the fire that happened there. But through the year, Tony, and you know, I've called 1,000 times and talked to both you guys about this. Okay, I've been invested in the Red Sox since I was a little kid, right? And usually when there's a good team, you know, championship caliber team, that type of stuff, you can remember certain parts of the season that were like, oh, here we go. This year is totally opposite. You remember the times that when they needed one of those moments and then they peed down their leg.
Exactly.
And the opposite effect happened.
Yeah, that's right.
When they took 2 out of 3 against the Twins like maybe a month and a half ago, and we're like, oh, sweet, the Twins, that'd be sweet. They blew the third.
Yeah.
The London situation. Then you had the Yankees 4-game series with, I think it was 4 games. Sale came out, and then he blew it on the Sunday night.
So, Tom, that's the thing, is the pattern was over and over. The same thing happened over and over again. It really was. It was frustrating. And so I don't remember many years where I never fully get sucked in. I don't remember it. And to me, they were largely irrelevant. Again, the Bruins spilled into mid-June. The Patriots are about to start. So if you take out those two things, the Red Sox had a little window there in the middle because of the way they started, and they never really brought anyone in. And I don't blame you. They didn't play well enough to do it. It's stunning because they usually have a captive audience. A really frustrating year in that way. And I think they did damage to themselves. John's in Fall River. Go ahead, John.
Hi, how are you, Johnny? I believe that the irrelevance started with the complacency of the offseason. We already beat up Alex Cora for the cockiness and everything else, but we forget about, like, the Puerto Rico stuff and the White House visit and all the distraction that happened even before spring training happened. So there was a little bit of that. I look at Dombrowski and the way that the roster was assembled. I mean, it was just the run-it-back team. They didn't do anything to switch anything up, and I get how taking a 108-win young team, you might want to run it back. But at the same time, throwing all the money at Evaldi, throwing all the money at Steve Pierce, the Craig Kimbrell will-they-won't-they game. The complacency started at the top early. And especially in this town with all the teams being good and, like, the NBA offseason was great. Like, the Bruins went to the Cup. Like, the Celtics were good, even if that was a train wreck. Even the train wreck was more fun. The Celtics train wreck was more fun than the Red Sox. The Red Sox have to grab your attention once the NBA and the NHL are over, and they never did it because they never grabbed anybody's attention to start with, even from, like, the end of 2018. Yeah, even got into 2019.
So, John, I don't know that I would call it fun, the demise of the Celtics, but I would say it was more compelling. The Red Sox this year were never really compelling. Ever. They were never compelling. And in fact, I almost wish that if they were going to self-destruct, finger pointing, accusations, blame, all of it, then that gets compelling. Then there's a reason to watch and listen. This team hasn't even done that. Now, look, I think that's going to change. I think Dombrowski's going to get fired. Maybe there'll be some fallout from that. So that could all still be coming. But during the season, zippo. Really, it is rare for that to happen with that team. Rare. And I don't disagree with the start of the year. They came in with the attitude like that they had it all figured out across the board. And they gave out a bunch of contracts on top of it. So I don't know, maybe it's pretty simple. What incentive was there for them to play? What incentive? None. Chris Sale got his contract. He didn't play. Pierce and Evaldi got their contracts. They didn't play. Now, Bogarts got his and did, so credit to Bogarts. Devers is still playing for money, so he played. But the large majority of them, there was no incentive. And that comment Alex Cora made last night, the Dumb and Dumber comment that pissed off from Bob from Methuen, I thought it was kind of funny. We'll play that for you when we come back after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
What are my chances?
Not good.
You mean not good like 1 out of 100?
I'd say more like 1 out of 1,000,000.
So you're telling me there's a chance? Yeah!
I know it's stupid. Dumb and Dumber, Jim Carrey. Wants to make up with Lauren Holly. No chance. 1 in 1,000,000, he takes it as a positive. So apparently this is what pissed off Bob and Methuen last night. Alex Cora sat down for his press conference last night and recognize where the Red Sox were. Of course, said this over and over. I mean, how many times has he said this year, we know where we're at? Over and over, we know where we're at. And the Red Sox never responded. I'm sorry, never responded. And Murray, you mentioned the start of the year earlier, and I knew I had a point I wanted to make, and I never get back to it. Early in the year, do you remember? Opening day, after a 108-win season, they lose. Fine. They won the second game, then they lost the next two. Okay, just a bad opening series.
No, they lost the next four.
No. But they lost. They went two in Seattle.
Yeah,
they went 1-3 in Seattle.
Yeah.
Then they went to Oakland, right? And we said, okay, new beginning, new start. They lost the series opener again. Then they went to Arizona. And on Friday night, was that the night they gave up 15 runs or something?
Yep, 15-8.
Okay, so they gave up 15 runs. And right when we came in on Monday, I remember talking to Felger about it. And I said, you know what I find worrisome about this? They're not responding. They are not responding. And then they came home, raised the banner, and lost. Over and over, they had a chance to reset. And they never kicked it into gear. So now Cora shows up last night. We know where we're at. We know where we're at. Kept saying it all year long. Well, he knows where they're at now. And again, we just played for you the clip from the movie Dumb and Dumber. Here's what Cora said when he stepped up to the podium to do his pregame last night.
Well, I mean, we have an 8% chance. So, I mean, like Dumb and Dumber, you know, the movie. There's still a chance, I guess. At least in my eyes.
So now, I don't know why Bob and Methuen got bent out of shape about that. I thought it was kind of funny.
Hey, it's just being silly. I mean, it hasn't obviously been a great year for him either, but I have no problem with that.
Listen, Cora's not a fool and he's not a BS artist, generally speaking. Okay, that whole thing that happened in New York with that, you remember how weird that was? The whole thing, like, is he pitching? Isn't he pitching? Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, now that was goofy.
That was wildly out of character. But generally speaking, Cora's not going to sit there and lie to your face. He's not wired that way. Farrell would have lied to your face. Cora wouldn't. Okay? So I look at Cora and I say, well, guys, you know, they're saying 8%. I mean, I guess that means we still have a chance. He's cracking a joke. But he knows. Cora knows. Everybody knows. And I just said this to Murray off the air. I have a hard time. Look, this is a Red Sox show. It's a baseball show. I have a hard time sitting here and trying to delude you into thinking that I believe that they're in it. I don't. I think they're dead. I think it's over. I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's a miracle here. Boy, would that be something. And I'm not ruling it out. But it's hard to believe it based on the way the year has gone. The pattern, the pattern with them, and again, the best way to put it, every time they have had a chance to respond, what we were talking about in that first road trip of the year, they had three opportunities to respond. They didn't. They came home. They had another one on opening day and raised the banner. They had a chance to respond. They didn't. Repeatedly. They just stayed asleep the whole year. Generally. Okay, now that's a broad general statement, but you get the idea. Sean is in a car. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, guys. Love the show. I'm here to talk about when, like, I was watching
I remember listening to you guys. It was after when they beat the Twins. Porcello pitched. It was 2-1. That's where I said to myself, okay, we got something. They can play a good baseball team. The Twins will just die off. And the exact opposite has happened. The Twins have stayed hot, and we never got relevant. And at this point, I'm kind of with you. I think it's dead, but I really hope that I'm wrong. Thank you guys. Love the show.
So, Sean, again, you go back to the early part of the year, and you know what? There's that old saying in a golf tournament, you can't win it on the first day, but you can lose it. I think it's true in a baseball season, too. You can't win anything in April, but you can blow it. You can blow it. They never really gained traction. Not really. They never really gained traction. And all of that goes back to the bad start. Now, you could say, well, look, at one point they get to 22-19. They were two games out, three games out, whatever. Great. So we're going to celebrate 22-19 now. They get to the quarter mile pole and they were three games over. Because you know what happens when you make all of that, you do all of that work to get to three games over? Inevitably, there's a losing streak around the corner and you fall right back under again. Happened all year long. Dan's in a car. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, Tony, I have a comment, but first, I think the best example of not responding was after the All-Star break. I mean, to me, that 8-game losing streak is what ended the year. But in terms of teams that resemble this, I feel like the 2014 team resembled this. They won in 2013. They came back. They were mediocre. They made a lot of poor decisions. That's the year they brought Stephen Drew back. That was the year they didn't know what to do with Bogaerts. They brought in Mike Cameron. And all year long, they were just mediocre at best, and they won nothing. And I think, if I'm right, I think they finished last that year, Tony.
They did finish last, but I'll tell you where I draw the distinction, and I'll make it fast. The 2013 team was lightning in a bottle. That was a transitional team. They got lucky. They won it. This team's loaded with talent. They got the MVP and one of the top 10 players in the game in Mookie Betts. They got one of the top five hitters in baseball, maybe, in J.D. Martinez. They got two left-handed starters that most teams would kill for. There's talent all over the place. They got the best shortstop in the game now. They might have the best third baseman in the game or one of the top three or four. There's talent everywhere. And they completely pulled a no-show. Out of the gate, and they never gained traction. Again, there was no incentive for them to play this year. And it showed. So they might win 84, 85 games, but that is a gross underachievement for this group, and we all know it. 617-779-0985. Pouring salt into the wound? Boy, you forget what late-season baseball is like if you're in it. The type of drama and the feeling that can infect a clubhouse positively. We'll give you an example of that and take a trip down memory lane, which you may not love. When we come back.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass, 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Kurt Suzuki, see you later! The Nats have won it! 7 runs in the bottom of the ninth!
And now, everyone dances! Unbelievable! Are you kidding me, Kurt Suzuki? This ball club is something else, I'm telling you. Something special is going on in D.C., folks. I have never seen anything like that ninth inning. 11-10, and he walks off the Mets. Unbelievable.
You guys have had, you know, comebacks this season. You've had just kind of moments where you talk about the fight. Just what is this rank?
Oh, this is, I mean, this is by far, I mean, this was, If I had to put it up against anything, this was game 162 that I was, you know, that we were in Tampa. I mean, that kind of comeback.
Game 162 in Tampa. You know what he's talking about, Murray, don't you?
Is that in What year was that?
05,
08?
2011. I'll tell you what it was. That was Dave Martinez, manager of the Washington Nationals. If you missed this last night, holy crap, what a game. What a game between the Mets and Nationals. And there's a Red Sox connection. So just hang on for a minute. Okay, it was 5-4 Mets going into the ninth. The reality is it was 4-2 going into the eighth, but whatever. Okay, 5-4, and the Mets get 5 runs in the top of the ninth to go up 10-4. It's over, right? Over. Then they bring in Edwin Diaz in the ninth. After there's a little bit of a rally against the Mets pitching staff in the bottom of the ninth. The Nationals start to rally, and ultimately he gets to a save situation. They bring in Edwin Diaz. What jackass wanted him again to be the closer of the Red Sox this year?
Would that be you?
And next year? Edwin Diaz ends on a home run by Kurt Suzuki. The Nationals score 7. 7 in the bottom of the ninth to beat the Mets. And the Nationals are currently in possession of the top wild card spot in the National League. The division's probably out of play. They're 6 behind the Braves in the East. But given the Nationals' history, any sort of season that demonstrates some level of magic is noteworthy. So they come back, they score 7 in the ninth and win, and then Dave Martinez, the manager, says that. Reminds me of game 162 when I was with Tampa. Huh. Game 162. Jimmy Stewart, our producer, is not here tonight. Billy Lanny, why don't you refresh everybody's memory as to game 162?
2-2.
And that was it. That was the end of the 2011 Red Sox. That was the end of Theo Epstein. That was the end of Terry Francona. And again, Tampa beat New York that night. They were down 7-0. The Red Sox blew a game in Baltimore. They lost 7 in a row to end the year. And again, not always for the better, but that's the drama of a pennant race. That is the drama that the 2019 Red Sox have deprived us of this year. And they never gave it to us at any point. Not really. Okay, just quickly, big matchup of the game presented by Big Y World Class Markets, serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. Tonight, Jose Berríos going for the Twins. Jackie Bradley, 1-for-11 with 5 strikeouts. No shock there. We'll take a couple of more calls, and then we'll get to Adam Jones, but you got to be fast. Bill's in Whitman. Bill, what do you got?
Hey, Tony, you were just talking about that game, 162, all that stuff. I thought you were going to talk about the game 1 year ago tomorrow with the Red Sox and the Braves when the Red Sox had that getaway day game and Cora put out the getaway day lineup out there.
Brandon
and
Phillips.
Come back, bingo, yes. And you said right after that, they're going to win it all. It's their year. And that's the difference between that team last year and the team this year is, look, they come back last night, but they can't finish the job. They come back against the Yankees when they lost 17-13 in London. They were down 17-6 in that game. You know, they dig themselves a hole, and they just can't get out of it, just like you said about this season. And
Bill, I didn't realize the anniversary of that game was tomorrow, and I let you go just because I want to get to a couple of other calls. We'll see if we can squeeze them in. I didn't realize that was tomorrow. Well, September 5th was the anniversary of the Brandon Phillips game. We might have to resurrect some sound from that one tomorrow, Murray.
Yeah. Thanks for the content.
Yeah,
sir.
John's in a car. Go, John.
You know, Tony, you bring up the 2011. I think I like that team more than this team because I at least hated that team. I couldn't care less if this team was even here. That should speak volumes about this year for this team. You know, when the Bruins lost, Tony, in that seventh game, the next day, if you look at the standings, the Red Sox were a game out of the wild card. They were still in it. Somehow, they got the 36 wins after that start, and they've been thrown up all over themselves all season. It's disgusting.
Yeah, John, listen, they had possession of the wild card spot in June, if I'm not mistaken. I'll go back and look. And you know what we all said? We were talking about this earlier. They'll make the playoffs. I don't know if they'll do anything when they get there, but they'll make it. None of us had any doubt that they would make the playoffs. Quickly, Carl in Northborough. You got to go fast, Carl.
Yeah, I was at Wrigley over the weekend, and the Cubs are one game better than the Red Sox. So do the Cubs suck, too?
It's irrelevant. It doesn't matter what your record is. It's where you are relative to the field. Hello?
Okay, good times.
Yeah, okay.
Going back to the caller prior to that guy who was lost in space, I'm a big believer in what he said. The worst thing you can feel as a sports fan is apathy towards your team. Like, at least 2011, towards the end, like, I actively hated that team.
No, you wanted them to lose.
Yeah, they didn't deserve to make the playoffs. I cackled when they lost the Orioles that night. This team, I mean, pretty much since 2 weeks into April, like, whatever. I think that's, you know, your topic tonight of, do people really care? Like, I don't think so. I don't think that they have for a while with this team, because they haven't.
I'm telling you, I think it's borderline, like, unprecedented. At least, as you know, there were a couple of other years I can remember where they were bad and it didn't matter. 97 was a bad year. Okay, that was Steve Avery was the ace. They weren't going to win anything that year. We all knew it. Then Pedro came. That was in 98, Murray.
Yep.
Ever since Pedro got here, I can't remember an irrelevant season. I can't remember one. I mean, even 06, you'd say the famous bridge year that Theo Epstein identified. In 06, they had a great win on a marathon day. They had the best record in baseball in the middle of June, and we all went, whoa, maybe we underestimated this team. Now they flatlined, but the fact that I remember it should tell you something.
Yeah.
You know what I'm going to remember about this team? They started 6-13, and that was it. That was pretty much it. There was never really any buzz after that. Adam Jones coming up next with our candid. Nice to see you in studio tonight, Jones.
Yes.
Nice to show up.
I enjoyed last night's Red Sox game very much. I have not paid attention to the Red Sox for a long period of time. I don't care. Apathetic about the Red Sox. So I flipped on the game in about the fifth or sixth inning, and legitimately, not joking, smiled like the Grinch when I saw Porcel Blow was getting his brains beaten in, just giving up a couple of home runs. And then I was flipping in and out. Watched a little bit of Jackie Bradley. Oh, excuse me, not Jackie. Jackie Bradley pinch hit for by something called Gorky's Hernandez in the ninth inning. And I don't smoke cigarettes, Tony, but I needed a full pack, maybe a full carton, after Porcel Blow got his brains beaten in. And then Jackie Bradley got benched in the ninth inning for something called Gorky's Hernandez. What a game. What a phenomenal game last night at Fenway Park. I loved it.
It was entertaining.
I thought it was one of the better games of the year. By the way, Duke Dawson, no longer a Patriot. Pretty big bust of a pick, right, I would say. Bill Belichick takes someone in the second round. They're gone a year later. Do you understand that Duke Dawson was part of a pretty significant trade in Patriots history?
I knew this was coming.
Jimmy Garoppolo. Duke Dawson.
Wasn't Jared Stidham part of that deal, too?
Jared Stidham was a part of that deal. He's a fourth-round pick. I'd say a less significant piece of that deal because, you know, you can spin things off. You can acquire a fourth-round pick however you'd like. Basically, the second rounder they got in return for Jimmy Garoppolo, Duke Dawson, already gone. And I'm not even a Garoppolo guy. But that trade just got a little bit worse, and it was already pretty crappy. So we're going to start with that.
Yeah, in case you couldn't tell, Jones is back. Murray's got your headlines. Everyone, we'll see you tomorrow.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.